As you know, Ireland will be taking on Samoa tomorrow morning in Fukuoka in a bid to secure a place in the Rugby World Cup quarterfinals. A lot of stuff going on, of course, about typhoons and other things. Well, I'm joined from Japan by Off the Ball's own Sheen, and Phil Egan is with us in studio to look ahead at what should be a fascinating weekend in sport. Owen, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
First of all, to borrow from John Duggan from Off the Ball, this is not pitch perfect.
Good pun. Yeah, it's not pitch perfect whatsoever. It's a situation where this pitch is looking very, very poor, actually. You would be kind of astonished if you saw this in a Pro 14 game, let alone a World Cup game. The pitch is essentially pulling up, Pat. They put down a new surface recently, and you could see scenes earlier on at the captain's run where Joe Schmidt was clearly very dissatisfied with the surface. Chris Farrell picked up a piece of turf from the grass at one point and buried the ball underneath it. That is how loose the grass is coming. And okay, it's not ideal for sure, but also when it comes to rugby, it's a safety hazard, you'd imagine, especially when it comes to scrum time. If somebody loses their foot in the scrum, the whole thing could collapse and that could cause injury. That's why scrums are penalised. So World Rugby have guaranteed health and safety and that it's passed all its checks, but it doesn't look good.
Now, the match is going ahead because the typhoon is not going to hit Fukuoka. What about the Scotland and Japan match? Is that still under threat or has the typhoon wandered somewhat away?
No, that's still very much under threat, Pat. The typhoon is still actually yet to make its way towards Tokyo, but I'm sure that those predictions are correct, that it will actually make its way up to Tokyo. So they are going to make a call on it on Sunday morning. It'll be the middle of the night, around 2 or 3 o'clock Irish time on Sunday morning when a call is made. And I think the reason why they haven't called it off is because they are hopeful that it can go ahead. So the storm is set to pass and be finished by Sunday morning Japanese time. It's after 7 o'clock in the evening the game kicks off. So I would say privately they have an expectation that they might be able to play this game behind closed doors. So it might not be safe for 70,000 people to come outside in Yokohama, but it might be safe enough for whatever, 30-odd players plus subs and all the management to make their way to Yokohama with special security. So I would say that as long as the typhoon is gone, they will try and get this game played.
Yeah. When you say the typhoon is gone, of course, we're looking at a hurricane. That's what they call their typhoons, or we call them hurricanes. They call them typhoons. We're talking about quite a wide area of spinning wind, effectively. So even when the main body of it has passed, there still will be extremely high winds to follow.
Yes, exactly. That's the problem. But also, it's the level of destruction as well, Pat. I mean, like, this is the equivalent of a Category 5 hurricane. Like, this is something that can cause serious damage. Now, there have been a couple of weather agencies who've said that it may actually come off super typhoon level by the time it actually reaches the land. But to be honest with you, that's real speculation. That's a very hard thing to decipher. You can tell where it's going to hit and when it's going to pass, but actually determining when it's going to lessen in strength can be a very, very difficult thing. So it's going to be a big one, Pat. Like, in terms of the diameter, it's not going to be wide enough for it to actually reach down here to Fukuoka or even reach, say, the middle of Japan, like in the areas like Osaka. But certainly Yokohama and Tokyo is going to be in the eye of the storm tomorrow. And the game is the day after. Like, I know Japan is a very well-organized country and they can recover from things like this, but I would say that trying to play this game even on the day after the typhoon is ambitious, but I do believe that that's what they are clinging to in hope.
Yeah, and we know the consequences for the game being totally called off is 2 points each for Japan and Scotland, sending Scotland home if we do the business as predicted against Samoa.
Exactly. If the game is called off, though, Ireland cannot top the pool, which is something that will probably irk a few people, because really, I think the following weekend, you get the Springboks. Second of all, you have an extra day off. It's if you come second in the group, Ireland will be playing on the Saturday against the All Blacks, and then if they top the group, it'll be Sunday against the Springboks. I don't know what anybody else thinks, but I think that's a huge difference. I think topping the group is seriously rewarded, regardless of how good the Springboks have looked. It's just because the All Blacks have looked absolutely awesome. In fairness, I was at the press conference earlier on, and I asked Keith Earls about that, about the All Blacks perhaps having an even greater advantage now that they have this weekend off, and he says that Ireland could perhaps use that to their advantage, that they'll be in flow, that they'll have played a game the week before, and that can be a very useful thing in a World Cup. So expect the narrative to shift that way, in a positive sense, if Ireland do get the All Blacks.
All right, Owen, thank you very much for all the weather news and all the pitch news from Japan. Phil Egan, it's bizarre, isn't it? They can't even get the pitch organised. You know, they're terribly well organised in public transport and everything else in Japan.
Yeah, it's not been very good PR for World Rugby the last few days. And just even going on what Owen said about playing New Zealand, if we do end up playing them, the fact that they'll have some extra days off to rest, I don't really buy into the narrative that that might actually work in Ireland's favour. No. I just think it'll work against us. And also, the fact that we're playing Samoa, we should beat Samoa, but there's going to be a lot of battered and bruised bodies, I'd say, after that.
So an extra day or two makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and, you know, as I said, I do expect us to beat Samoa, but we have effectively got a first team out there as well, which is a big concern that we'll only have 7 days if it is the All Blacks who play. And, you know, it all points towards another disappointing quarterfinal exit.
And if only we had done the business against Japan, and it would all be different. We'd just put the second string out against Samoa and keep everyone fresh.
Yep.
Anyway, that was that. And we'll see on Monday when we're talking about this, we'll know what the story is and who we face. Now, we've another match, of course, an Ireland match tomorrow, and it's an afternoon.
Yeah, it's a 2 o'clock kickoff our time. So Ireland are away to Georgia, and we're very familiar with the Georgians at this stage. Played them 11 times. We've never lost to them, beaten them 10 times. But the last time we were in Tbilisi, we drew 1-1 with them. And, you know, it didn't turn out to be a damaging result because we went to Wales and we got into a World Cup playoff before Denmark took care of business in that one. But tomorrow is a pivotal day in Group D for Mick McCarthy's side, because when we play at 2 o'clock, if Ireland were to win, and then at 5 o'clock our time, Denmark plays Switzerland. Now, I think from an Irish point of view, it would actually be good for us. If that game ends in a draw, but if there is to be a winner, if Switzerland were to win that, that would mean, regardless of what happens in Geneva next Tuesday when we play them, and that's going to be a tough game, it would mean that Ireland know going into the final game against Denmark at the Aviva Stadium next month that a draw would guarantee a top two finish. But it's not an easy game.
Not an easy game. But the good news is the future looks rosy. The under-21s are flying.
Absolutely. And Aaron Connolly, who has been the star for the under-21s, is obviously part of Mick McCarthy's squad tomorrow. And Mick has said that he's pretty certain that he's going to feature at some stage. I'd be very surprised if he starts. But it certainly means that the current under-21 crop know that the gateway is there, that if you play well for the under-21s, you'll be a senior international in a few years. And it helps that Stephen Kenny is in charge of the under-21s. They play very nice football, nil-all draw against Italy and Tala last night. Unfortunately, very windy night. It was the same for the women's game the other night against Ukraine, where it kind of the conditions made it quite tough. But a nil-all draw, Ireland are top of the group, never qualified for an under-21 European Championships. But certainly the style they play, we for years we've given out about
hoof it and hope.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas there's a definite plan, there's a strategy, and Stephen Kenny, we saw this with Dundalk. He likes the game played a certain way. He encourages his players to get the ball on the deck. So, you know, when he takes over from Mick McCarthy after the Euros, this is what he's going to demand from his players. So certainly the future does look bright, and I'd be a lot more optimistic than I was, say, 2 years ago.
All right, well, we shall see how that unfolds. But anyway, they're not putting too much pressure on the under-21s because it's still maturing.
Yeah.
And we saw Troy Parrott getting sent off for a
second
yellow card.
Yeah, I thought it was very harsh. I thought
he was punched, was that it? And then he reacted.
Well, you know, the hand was raised. Moyes Keane, who's an Everton striker, young Italian striker, did, by the letter of the law, he raised his hand. So, yeah, you can say it's a red card. Very soft, but there was a lot of that going on in the game, Pat. There was a lot of needle where the Italians didn't need an invitation to hit the deck. And that's all part and parcel of the game, where you have to adapt to how other teams play, and they think it's okay to take a dive to the ground. It's not something we're used to, and you live and learn.
Okay, Moyes Keane couldn't play for us.
No. M. Keane. If you saw M. Keane on the team sheet, you think he must have Irish blood, but no, he's an Italian international, certainly one that we see a bit of in the Premier League week in, week out.
All right. Now, the big news from the world of athletics is that the Oregon project has now been shut down by Nike, which is very interesting. And this is on foot of Alberto Salazar being banned for 4 years. Speaking on Off the Ball AM yesterday, Ciara McGeehan talked about that 1500 metre final in World Athletics Championship in Doha. She came 10th out of 12, which puts her top 10 in the world for the 1500 metres. But the winner was Sifan Hassan, trained by Alberto Salazar, who ran in an astonishing 3:51. This is Ciara giving her reaction to Off the Ball AM yesterday.
I train my whole life. I work my backside off to dedicate my life's work to athletics. And it is so infuriating for us that people are still out there manipulating it. And these are often discussions that you have in athletics among athletes. You'll see a performance and you go, I came off the track and didn't know what time she had ran until I met Cathal Dennehy, and he was like, what did you think of Hassan's performance? And I knew she won, and he's like, 3:51, and I just went, what? 3:51? That's fast. Like, I walked to my coach, and having ran a PB to come top 10 in a world championships, I would have taken his hand off to be offered that at the beginning of the year. And I came away with, like, I was like, Steve, what can I do? Because my dream is to win world-class medals for Ireland. And I know that I can run sub 4 minutes. I know that I can get into the realms of, I don't know, let's dream 3:55. But I do know that I'm not run 3:51. That's not a realistic goal for me. Now, can humans do that? Who knows?
Who knows? Not quite pointing the finger, but Hassan being trained by Salazar, and Laura Muir, who's a brilliant Scottish athlete running for Britain, 3:55, came fifth.
Yeah, the Ciara McGeehan there, the dream time for her, and that wouldn't even get a medal.
Yeah. So the decision by Nike is understandable?
Yeah, so they just said it had become an unfair burden on the Oregon Project athletes. So it's, you know, it's something that probably isn't much of a surprise, but does it mean that they're going to stop training with the, you know,
those athletes? Because the project itself, which was headed up by Alberto Salazar, is no more. But they presumably will continue to back with sponsorship and so on some of the key athletes who are demonstrably clean.
They also, Nike have said that they continue to support Salazar in his bid for his appeal. He wants to appeal this 4-year ban. So it looks like somebody at Nike just decided, right, we're not getting great headlines out of this, let's just shut it down. And this is probably the thing that might get people off her back, but I don't think it will.
I mean, one of the accusations against him was that he was kind of bending the rules. He wasn't breaking them, but he was using, for example, instead of injecting stuff or whatever, he was rubbing stuff on the muscles of the athletes, and this had a very beneficial effect. But such are the rules that really all you can do is obey the rules as they are given to you.
Yeah.
And I mean, people try to go as close to the wind as they can without falling foul of them.
Absolutely. We see it in all sports where if somebody can get what they say is a fair advantage, they will try and get it. But
There are so many asthmatics playing top class sports
with
inhalers.
Who knew? Yeah. Because I remember there was lads I played football with who had asthma, and certainly they weren't the budding athletes that we see nowadays.
All right, Phil. On that note, Phil Egan, thank you very much.